Hello, and welcome to The Noble Perspective, the podcast where we discuss everything from investing, financial planning, current events, and other exciting topics. In episode 6 of the podcast, Grant Glenn interviews Neil Demers to discuss the evolution of the cannabis industry and other developments that you may find exciting. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to A Noble Perspective. I'm your host, Grant Glenn, and with me I have a special guest, Neil Demers. He is the CEO of Diego Pellicer. Neil received his undergraduate degree from one of the most prestigious universities in the country, Colorado State University, and a Master of Science in Finance from the University of Denver. Neil began his career in finance and shifted to cannabis in 2010. Since then, he has consulted, owned, and operated up and down the cannabis supply chain, and we are lucky enough to have him as a guest on our show. Neil, welcome to the Noble Perspective podcast.
Thanks, Grant. I'm really excited to be here today and talk about the cannabis industry and hopefully be able to answer some questions and provide some insight for you guys.
Perfect. Thank you. And I've known Neil since 2008, and I can't tell you how much respect I have for his work ethic, drive, professionalism, knowledge, and ability to navigate through change. These traits may be the reason Neil has been so successful in operating in an industry that is constantly evolving. These traits may have been the reason why Neil was so willing to take a leap of faith to be one of the few entrepreneurs at the forefront of the emerging cannabis industry. To some, this was known as the Wild West days of cannabis. Can you tell us more about your career switch and the opportunity that you saw in cannabis, Neil?
Sure. So I actually was in the finance industry prior to entering the cannabis sector. I was working for Oppenheimer Funds. And, you know, I decided I wanted to start my own business and develop a consulting company. And in 2010, cannabis was just taking off in Colorado. So I decided to focus on the cannabis industry. Launched a staffing company called CannaStaff. It was the first of its kind. I did very well, but it was just tough to find a talent pool back then to keep up with the demand. Was also doing project-based consulting in parallel. Did a lot of compliance and operational consulting and business development consulting, and that ended up taking off, where eventually I was picked up by a group full-time, where I was running two stores and two grows, and I was successful in that position. Had a chance to, a couple years later, go run an infused product operation, where that was also vertically integrated, where we had the cultivation operation, the extraction, and the kitchen to make infused products, and was successful there. And around 2013, 2014, I decided I had built up quite a bit of knowledge and skill sets in addition to my background I was able to leverage, where I put together some investor documents and pro formas and identified some opportunities in the market and raised some money to launch my own deal. And today, I now own Diego Pellicer, Colorado, and I have a flagship store here in Denver, two cultivation facilities with about almost 500 flower hoods under production. And I also have an infused product and extraction division as well.
Perfect. And you just launched the second store. Congratulations on opening that. Diego 2.0.
Diego 2.0, yep. It's actually over near University of Denver, Broadway and Evans. I closed on that deal on Friday, and I'm very excited about that project. It's going to be the next evolution of Diego and, you know, learning from what we've built to date and how to improve it. And we're going to be able to apply all that knowledge to the new store. And I'm very excited about it.
Great. And given your finance background, were you tempted to name your store Diego Beta instead of Diego 2.0?
No. Maybe we could have done Beta. You know, the goal is to, as you guys know, to drive alpha. And so we want to, instead of building our store for $1 million, which is almost what it costs for the initial store, I want to see if we can build three for the same amount of money. And
terrific.
And I want to modernize it, make it, you know, more contemporary, integrate more technology, more education. We have a larger showroom with this new store, and we're even going to have a cultivation room on display for us to be able to teach customers about cultivation.
Terrific. Now, something that our listeners are probably you know, at least somewhat interested in would be the evolution of the cannabis industry since jumping in, you know, 2012 or 2010, I believe, right?
2010.
Yeah, since 2010, what have you seen in What changes have there been in the cannabis industry?
You know, a lot of people have called the cannabis industry the green rush, in that it's not going to be often that you find an opportunity where you can get into an emerging market and sector with so much upside. The green rush kind of relating to the gold rush. And, you know, this market has evolved quite a bit. As you said earlier, it was the Wild West back in 2010, which is mm-hmm. true. It was barely regulated. The state and local regulators were trying to develop the laws and figure out what direction they wanted to take the industry and how do you control it and foster it mm-hmm. While keeping people of bad character out of the industry and encouraging, you know, people who want to launch a business and be entrepreneurs to develop that business and be successful. And that's been a balance for the state of Colorado and even nationally, but things are always improving. And so that was day one. Is it was a lightly regulated industry where people didn't know what they were doing and it was all private market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually after we got our footing underneath us and the foundation was built, you started to see opportunities become more available at the public market, especially in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Canada was the springboard for the public markets for cannabis.
Was it Cronos? Is that the first IPO up in Canada?
I don't know. Off the top
of my
head.
Some of the big ones. Yeah. I know Canopy's up there.
Canopy's up there. Aurora, you have your Tilray's.
Afria has been making some... I guess progress through the industry, but
Kira Leaf just did a big acquisition or announced a big acquisition of Grassroots recently. Mm-hmm. I think that was actually today or the last couple of days.
Yeah,
and what Kira Leaf thinks is going to happen is they're going to be the largest public company when you look at the revenues.
Okay,
and so I'm pretty interested in following that. They're a multi-state operator, 15 states, a ton of stores, vertically integrated. So they have processing and extraction facilities and cultivation as well. I think
this with is not this, a pitch for Curaleaf. Just an FYI.
No, it's not. It's just what's happening just what we're in the
saying,
market today.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, this market is crazy. It used to be that you can get huge market cap valuations just with an idea.
Yeah,
you can go to Canada and say that I want to be a cannabis business, and you would have all kinds of money coming into that company mm-hmm. and get really big valuations.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, the market said, okay, well, what's next? And that's the trend is what is next and where is it going?
And they had to start caring about the financials eventually, right? And, revenue growth, and, things and, like that.
Yeah, so that's where it's at today. So it goes from, you know, establishing an idea to mm-hmm. touching cannabis in an indirect way,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was consulting, ancillary products, ancillary services, or even real estate. There's a lot of REITs that were being developed
mm-hmm.
where these real estate investors would own the properties and lease out to cannabis operators, whether it was for cultivation or retail, and they would make big margins and markups and premiums on the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And so those companies were getting big valuations and money would be going into the public companies. After that, you know, you see more of these management and licensing deals where these companies now have gained experience and have IP specific knowledge that they can apply to businesses
mm-hmm.
and the market was giving valuation there.
Mm-hmm.
Next is where you really start to see the market pivot, where the market wants more.
Mm-hmm.
And so the market then decided that we will give valuations, but you have to touch cannabis
mm-hmm.
and either you have a cultivation operation, a retail store, infused products, but you got to be involved in cannabis. We don't care what it is. And that's where the value is going to be for us now.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it's evolved even further. And what you're seeing today, and I can tell you where the market's going, is today the market is focused on revenue producing assets. And that's where you're going to find the value when it comes to gaining market value. And a lot of these companies are shifting their business models to focus on revenue producing assets. Well, in cannabis, what is that? In reality, it's the dispensaries. The mm-hmm. dispensaries are where the revenue is at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's some issues, especially related to taxation, that we can talk about later if you want. But you know, most of these business models, especially the ones that are going to be focusing on dispensary operations, those are going to be the companies that are going to be growing, especially in market value and market cap.
No pun intended.
Yeah, yeah, and they're going to get very high in the near future. And And after that, you know, that's the stage we're at now. You said, what phase are we at now? We are at, you know, assigning value to revenue producing assets. But what's next? Well, next is going to be the businesses that actually have a positive free cash flow and actually positive EBITDA. Mm-hmm. And that the market's not demanding that today. They just want, you know, that's going to be the next phase is who are the businesses that know how to run a business, made good acquisitions, and actually focus on the financials of the company. You know, you see the companies out there like the Ubers and the Amazons that took a long time and they operated in the negative for a very long time to sustain themselves, and they mm-hmm. had to use investor money to offset that. Well, the cannabis industry is going to go much faster. It's mm-hmm. going to say, we want you to demonstrate that you can build a successful company, and EBITDA is the next stage.
Investors want to see that quick, or they're pulling their money out.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, after that, there's probably going to be two more steps. Then profit. You know, they want to see positive net income. That will be maybe two phases. And from there, you're going to see a shift of where the value is within the actual assets of the industry. And where I think you're going to see a lot more value being provided to is going to be brands. That's the future, is the brands that are developed. If you're going to be just a small mom and pop shop, you can be successful, and especially if you're a boutique, but eventually they're going to want to see more chains and mm-hmm. multi-state operations, and they want to see a brand that's developed and that is being built and that's being successful. Mm-hmm. Cultivation doesn't really get much value these days. you know, what you find is new markets are, it used to be that markets couldn't keep up with demand. All this money went into cultivation operations. And because of that, you have markets like Colorado, California, Washington, Oregon that are oversupplied. And so it became more commoditized. And because it's
putting
commodity,
down pressure on prices, right?
Exactly. We have more supply, and the supply is not able to keep up with the demand, and thus it's become more commoditized. And so where the value is, you know, like I said, the retail stores, the branding, but there's two other opportunities where you're going to see a lot of value in this industry. The companies that are focused on more consumer packaged goods, those mm-hmm. are going to be the final end product, whether you're developing an edible, a cartridge, a concentrate, pre-packed flower,
edible,
more specific,
and that's
goods,
marijuana that you eat.
That's correct. Yep.
Instead
correct.
Of smoke or rub on your skin.
And I guess I think that that the smoking and flower is going to reduce over time, and you're going to see more people enjoying edibles, and especially with education, when you can learn how to take it and then enjoy it without being overwhelmed by the experience. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see vaporizers become more and more popular, especially as the hardware and technology becomes better. Mm-hmm. You know, if a company can develop a cartridge system and hardware where one hit of a vaporizer is equal to one hit of a pipe, that person is going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that's the future of the cartridge industry, and that's what they're trying to do right now.
Mm-hmm. As long as they don't make, you know, bubblegum cherry flavors, then encourage teen vaping of pot, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Run into the same problems as
Juul. You've got to be careful. And education is so important, and not allowing, you know, underage kids and teens to touch the product is going to be important. You know, if we want this industry to continue to be successful, regulating mm-hmm. it in a smart and efficient way is going to continue to be the best way to do it.
Great. And I guess we've talked about what opportunities exist in the marketplace today, and you hit on that a little bit, but what specific aspects of the cannabis industry are investors high on? You'll probably hear a lot of puns today. But, you know, is it CBD? Do they care more about that? Are investors assigning a higher multiple to CBD companies as opposed to your traditional dispensary and grow operation?
Yep, that's a great question. So a couple things is you saw a lot of business and investment opportunity in Canada. The market's cooled down. It's no longer as active out there, and what you're seeing is a lot of the investor interest shifting over to the United States exchanges. Mm-hmm. Most of the cannabis companies are going to be on the OTC, probably primarily the OTCQB and the OCTQX.
Over-the-counter markets, yes.
Yep. There are some companies on the NASDAQ, and that's where the big boys want to go, because mm-hmm. you have a lot more access to capital once you get to the NASDAQ.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that with Tilray. Yep. They listed on NASDAQ, I believe, correct?
I do believe
and
so.
Those valuations were just sky high.
Yeah, but that's the other thing is as an investor, you got to be careful. Cannabis has been overhyped for a long time, and as we discussed the phases that have taken place, but there's been some market adjustments recently where most cannabis stocks have come down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear stories all the time about people getting in with Tilray mm-hmm. or getting in with the Canopy or Aurora, and you know, they did see growth, but a lot of that growth was hype. Mm-hmm. And if these executives don't start focusing on the things that the business actually needs from a foundation and you know, what's going to develop value for them, then you're seeing the market adjust, and that's what you're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. And so the companies that were the idea guys, the real estate guys, the ancillary service, or even cultivated, you know, even a business that focuses on cultivation, they're the ones that are having their stock price hammered on right now. Mm-hmm. And you would not, you know, I in my opinion, I wouldn't, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
Please say what you want to. That's fine.
Okay. So in my opinion, I would not, you know, even focus on those companies. Mm-hmm. You know, the companies they want to focus on are the ones that are going to be focused on retail and brand development, possibly some product development.
Got it.
Now, with the CBD market, mm-hmm. that's a unique opportunity, and that's a much bigger
opportunity.
And we don't
know how
cannabis.
There's estimates, but we don't know how big that market can get, right?
It's going to be very big.
I question. I mean, obviously the multiples and the valuations use the word valuation a lot, but what I see when I'm analyzing these companies is these valuations. I question whether these companies can ever grow into their valuation. There's another pun, by the way. But, you know, experts estimate that the cannabis industry can reach up to $65 billion by 2025.
Yep.
And let's just assume that's true. We have companies out there, Canopy, Cronos, Tilray, trading at, you know, market capitalizations of $10 to $20 billion,
yep.
right? Let's just say it's $20 billion on one of those companies. And once that industry matures, maybe it should trade at a revenue multiple of about 2x, which means it should have about twice as much market capitalization as it does revenues, right? That would imply about $10 billion in revenues, or about 1/6 of the market share. And with how many companies that we have, 1/6 is a bit of a stretch when the market is so saturated. So I guess I just have to ask you, do you think it's possible for these companies to ever grow into their valuation? Or are investors just high?
No, I think that you need to be very careful, because you're exactly right. And what's going to happen is those stock prices are going to adjust over time and come down. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these big guys are getting anywhere between a 30 up to even a 70 a multiple. Mm-hmm. And that's just unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, at the
multiple
operator,
of
multiple
income
revenue. This is revenue.
Yeah, yeah. And the broad market, you might see revenue multiples of 2x, like I was saying earlier. But that's for a mature industry.
Yep.
For a nascent industry like cannabis, obviously it warrants a higher multiple. But 40x, 60x,
nope.
That just doesn't make any sense.
You can probably expect 10 to 20x.
Got it. Great, Neil. This has been really great information, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be on our show. One, you know, recent development in the cannabis industry, and I think that it's important for our audience to understand the recent passage of House Bill 1090 and the implications behind that. Can you share a little bit with our audience about what that means to you and the industry as a whole?
It's a game changer for the industry in Colorado. And what it does is it allows, you know, not just out-of-state ownership, but public company ownership in Colorado. And this does multiple things. It gives us more access to capital than what we've had previously, but it will also creates new opportunities. So me as a local operator, I can maybe go get a 1 to 1.5x of revenue if I were to sell my business today. But if I were to try to be acquired or do a reverse merger, which are the two most likely scenarios that is happening in Colorado right now, and even Diego Pellicer, Colorado, is exploring its options, I can get much larger multiples. And I can benefit by making a move now. November 1st is when a public company in Colorado can have submit for change of ownership. There's a process that will take 4 months or so for that to – you'll start to see those being approved. But I can do a reverse merger now into either a new shell or into an existing company, or just be acquired. And by getting in now and early, I can participate in the uptake of that stock by rolling in strong assets, strong revenue, the IP, the team. And that's what's happening in Colorado right now is – a lot of these public companies are coming to Colorado, identifying the large operators, and they're not going to look for the single operator. Some will, but what we're doing is we're forming a pseudo collective, developing a portfolio that's attractive enough to be acquired or strong enough to do a reverse merger on. And everyone in Colorado is looking at this options. Not everyone's going to do it, but it's right now the new opportunity. And cannabis has been tough to make money, and there's a lot of reasons why, from overregulation, IRS 280E, not having banking.
And what's 280E? Just briefly.
IRS 280E basically only allows me as the business to deduct my cost of goods sold.
Got it.
And I cannot deduct my standard expenses. So at my dispensary, I can't deduct rent, payroll, marketing, like a normal business.
And obviously those are, the bulk of expenses for a business.
Yep.
Right?
Oh yeah.
So
that's where your audience should pay attention, is that as these things start to change, as banking is going to be allowed, as IRS 280E is eliminated ideally from cannabis, when cannabis gets rescheduled from the Controlled Substance Act and gets descheduled, that's where you're going to see really big opportunity in the market. And a lot of those restraints is the reason why a lot of these companies are forced on the over-the-counter market, the OTC, versus the NASDAQ. It's very difficult to get to NASDAQ, and it requires a lot of unique structures to maintain it. But when we start to see the federal government change their position, which they are doing right now, there's a lot of bipartisan movement to fix these issues. And then the market's even going to be stronger and better, easier access to capital. And there's a lot of these players and investors, private equity companies, venture capitalists, just large investors that are on the sidelines right now because they're not comfortable putting their money in the industry yet. But they're watching it, and they're getting ready, and it's going to happen.
Terrific. Well, we're about out of time, so I want to thank you for being on the show. I do want to address somewhat of a personal topic and say congratulations, because Neil just had his first child, and he actually named his child after me.
I did.
Grant is his name, and I was just curious what motivated you to name your son Grant after me.
I think it's a very strong name, and by chance, someone I knew, you, helped demonstrate that it's a strong name.
And it wasn't because you saw how strong I was. For example, bench pressing.
Yep, tennis.
That might have done it.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, thanks a lot for allowing me to be on the show today.
Thanks
really
for being on the show.
It.
We appreciate that. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. As a reminder, everything discussed in today's podcast is not intended to be investment advice or tax advice to any specific circumstance, and we would recommend that you speak to a tax professional or your investment professional about any questions that you might have related to your own situation. Noble Wealth Partners is not liable for any ambiguous or incorrect information that was mentioned in today's podcast.